A few things I want to say about this as we talked. Number one, if we spend the day in negativity, whining and moaning about the church, this will be a waste of our time, right? So let's just not do that. I'm pledged not. Deconstruction goes nowhere when it's just deconstruction. My son deconstructs all day, and then he doesn't want to put the things away at the end of the year. Deconstruction is just a mess, basically. On the other hand, being apologists for the status quo is equally a waste of time. To just say everything's fine, let's not critique anything, like a couple that goes to a counselor and refuses to acknowledge that there's any problems. That's not particularly healthy either. So it seems like there's that combination of constructive, creative, restorative, we use the word create, where we're not just deconstructing things, but we're telling the truth in an attempt to build something better. Sort of that, some of you are familiar with the Stockdale paradox of prisoners of war. You can't be, everything's great, we're going to be fine, and you can't be down in the dumps, but somehow you have to, as Jim Collins says, confront the brutal facts, but without losing hope. So it's a mixture of those two. So to the degree that anybody up front misses the mark on that, you know, we're missing the mark. We're attempting to create that environment, and I hope our conversation will reflect that. In addition, there are two college chaplains from North America, three local church pastors, and one historian that will be up front presenting. Please hear me. We are not the experts. We're embarrassed sort of to stand up to get this thing going. There are scholars in this room. There are people with incredible bits of experience. We did not come up with this list of six because we represent global diversity or socioeconomic or racial. We just said we've got to get the thing going. So please understand, we stand before you more as those who give testimony than thinking of ourselves in any way as knowledgeable. Are you with me? So we all are sufficiently, we woke up this morning sufficiently petrified about this experience. This is not an academic, we're just going to do our best to tell some stories about where we think things might be. So last thing I'd say about our preparation, I just want you to kind of get into the heads of where we were as we spent a whole day praying and thinking about this many months ago. Do we do something on hermeneutics, theology, women's ordination, eschatology? We made a long list of all the places you could start to go with something like this. But we kept coming back. We felt the Spirit pushing us to the priority of the local church. If Christ died for our sins is the main thing, then the application of the main thing is incarnational. It is the body of Christ in the local environment. So, the local church. Back in March of 1998, I wrote an article for the Adventist Review, Bill Johnson. I think I remember who the editor was then. And somehow you were foolish enough to put it on the front cover of this particular article. And I was digging around in my files, March 19, 1998, why you know, a 27-year-old. But this is what I wrote. I was just digging through boxes in my basement trying to find this, and I found it. I'm listening, but I don't like what I hear. A Seventh-day Adventist religion professor tells me about the local churches in his area. To tell you the truth, he says, there isn't a single healthy, vibrant church in the area. As far as Adventist local churches go, this region is dying. I'm listening, but I don't like what I hear. In a Net 98 Satellite Evangelism Planning Committee, ring a bell, the discussion turns to the number of meetings the series should include. One committee member wonders if we have... if we could have fewer meetings and then encourage local churches to continue the Bible studies with new converts. A seasoned administrator replies, we've tried that. We can't depend on the local churches to follow through on Bible studies. It just won't happen. I'm listening, but I don't like what I hear. In a conversation with a local conference president, not mine, I ask how many of the 100-plus churches in his conference have a strong vision for ministry. Oh, about three, he says, maybe four. I'm listening, but I don't like what I hear. A layperson is explaining the predicament she feels about inviting her unchurched friends to her local church. I can't invite them to my church, she says. There's no telling what might happen. But then again, I don't know an Adventist church in my area that I would feel comfortable taking them to. I'm listening, but I don't like what I hear. A couple more paragraphs. Do I find myself in the wrong conversations? Am I simply hearing the negative voices? Is this just pessimism? Over the last several months, I've listened to dozens of committed, card-carrying Seventh-day Adventist church administrators, pastors, lay members describe the desperate situation of many Adventist local churches. This local church is in critical condition, they say. It has become the weak link in Adventism. Exciting stories are told about the growth of Florida Hospital, new research at Loma Linda University, the latest book from Pacific Press, or a new global television initiative at the General Conference. By contrast, the local church's storyline is mostly stagnant. It isn't that there are no bright spots. Encouraging conversations about a church here or there always pop up. A flame still flickers and in some cases burns brightly, but the stories seem to be lonely voices rather than a full-fledged choir. So this is sort of a know-nothing 20-something expressing what I'm thinking and feeling so long ago. So now I pastor at Walwal University, a university church full of college students, young adults who have sort of self-selected as being the most committed to Adventism. Are you with me? Because they're choosing Adventist higher education. If you look at the, which is a shrinking percentage, but these are sort of the chosen of the chosen, or the choosers of the choosy, right? All of my colleagues, the other college pastors and chaplains, we have a universal worry. The stories we hear when our young people leave our campuses and they say, I can't find a church. Southeast, Northwest, West Coast, center of the country, talking North American context at this point, a raft of stories. Can't find a church, can't find a welcoming church, can't get involved. And this is not news. I'm not saying anything that's sort of new, and I see many heads nodding. The number of people that come to one project and say, this is my lifeboat. What? This is my lifeboat. These are the 2 days that can keep me in the Adventist game for the rest of the year because of what I'm going back to. What? Do you hear what I'm saying? The One Project's great, but the One Project is 2 days of getting together. If the other 300 in this year, 64 days, are something else, what's the matter? It seems to me that the local church is in trouble in the Seventh-day Adventist Church. I'm going to assert this without great empirical data or belaboring it anymore. I'm just going to let it float. If you wish to push back on this crisis when we have a conversation time, please do. One man's view, I am horribly worried about the state of the local congregation, particularly North American Adventism. And you've read the data, the graying of Adventism, and what percentage of churches are going to close and which ones are already de facto dead. And we laugh about it nervously, but I'm telling you, if you ask me, what am I primarily worried about in terms of Adventism in North America, I am desperately worried about the local church. So why is the local church in trouble? I think unpacking that might be helpful. And I printed out some very crude diagrams that I put together, and they're in your handout. And the first is, Rod, we'll just go to figure one. I think we have it up here as well. So just keep that in mind. We're going to work our way up that pyramid. So number one, I think we need to acknowledge what historically has been the purpose of Adventism. And here I wish to give credit to Dr. Lauren Siebold in a very recent piece for Spectrum, which I think that he eloquently sort of hit the nail on the head. So I want to read to you from what he wrote just weeks ago. He said, as a denomination, we've not made developing congregations our priority. Rather than making the local congregation the center of our life together, we moved our members' focus up the church ladder in the direction of ministries we share collectively. We worked hard on schools, colleges, hospitals, publishing houses, media ministries, administrative offices, missions, and soul-winning events. But creating strong, healthy congregations hasn't seemed like the most important thing that we do, even for those of us in congregations. Why? I want you to note Siebold's language. The key feature of our sociological development, he argues, it seems to me, was neither the Sabbath nor the Second Advent, but our fear of Roman Catholicism. By extending that antipathy to all other Protestant churches that follow the Catholic Church's lead in worshiping on Sunday, we effectively segregated ourselves from other Christians. As a result, we came to identify more with the denomination than with the congregation. We were Seventh-day Adventists first, and I think this is where he really hit it for me, and then members, secondarily, of a particular Seventh-day Adventist congregation. So the sense of ourselves as a movement that it is preparing for Jesus' soon return has made congregations seem temporary and unimportant in comparison with the big task we have to do, which is to win the world for Christ. You've heard of escapist dreams, right, in the church? You know the old hymn, "This world is not my home, I'm just passing through." I think there's some truth in this hymn for Seventh-day Adventists. Build a major facility project at a local level and talk about wanting to build it in a way that will be strong for the next 50 years. And you get pushback because it betrays the very sense of what it means to be an Adventist, that we're out of here. And soon. And hear my language. I'm not being sarcastic. I'm saying our hope is we're out of here. And so what I'm wondering is, with you this morning, is the embodiment of the local church itself in the sort of permanence, material presence that the local church represents, is the local church in a way a betrayal of what it means to be an Adventist? If you're listening to the language that I'm using. Because to pour oneself into a real community with real people, with real soil, an actual locality, in a fervent way, is to suggest we've got something to do here and it may take a while. You see what I'm saying? So I'm wondering here, and again, I'm not throwing stone. I'm wondering if the local church itself, in terms of where we might hope that it might go, is in fact an affront to this other sense of ability that we have, that we sort of don't want to be here. Okay, so there's a tension, and the local church actually can feel a bit like the enemy. So Adventism often works better as a concept than a community. And again, please hear me. I'm going to keep saying, apologizing. I'm not throwing stone. I've been thinking about this for a long while. It works great as a concept, and it's a great concept. But it wars against the sense of present community. On a napkin several months ago at a restaurant, I was drawing some circles, and I want to refer to you, I think it's figure 2. Yeah, Rod, thank you. And this is, I drew out what I've been feeling about the church that I love, the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And if you look at these concentric circles, it seems to me, because we are the protesters of protesters, right? You have the Protestants, and then we are the Protestants of the Protestants, right? We're protesters. This has made any reflection on being a part of, or reading the books of, or any involvement in global Christianity is immediately shut down with the word ecumenical, right? So we're very uncomfortable. I don't need to belabor this. We're very uncomfortable with any sort of interaction to global Christianity. It makes us very nervous. And so, ecumenical. You have one non-Seventh-day Adventist speaker at one project. It's an ecumenical movement. Right? No, I mean, we're just very... What I'm trying to say is, we come by honestly. Right? Because our tradition, we're protesters of protesters. This is sort of how we've laid things out. But on the other hand, and that's for a whole nother create maybe in the future, we can deal with that. But on the other hand, the local church makes us nervous. And the word we use there is congregationalism. Congregationalism. I think that I can point to many pastors and other church leaders in North America who've gotten into trouble for this or that or the other. They've gotten a lot of heat just based on those two things. Ecumenical, you're interacting with the rest of the world. Congregational, too much local influence or control or emphasis. Where we're comfortable is right here in the middle. The SDA denomination, the incorporation. That's when we use the word church, that's what we most often mean. Denomination, that middle category. Nothing wrong with that, but that is, I think, where it sits. So I think that that's at the very foundation. Now, I'm going to pick things up more quickly now. The second category, then, I think this just flows naturally, is the geography of our money. So we're moving from purpose to purse, okay? The hymn says, "This world is not my home. I'm just a passing through." What comes next? "My treasures are laid up somewhere beyond the blue." Well, hello, it makes sense, doesn't it? I mean, if that's to play with Jesus' phrase, which I think is legit, where your heart is, there will be your treasure also. It makes sense. George Knight famously, and if you haven't read If I Were the Devil, it's just a delightful read. It's a hoot. It's one, the kind you read before you go to sleep, and you can read the whole thing. And he presented part of that book back in Toronto at the GC session. So I'm going to read to you what is a famous set of paragraphs, but I think that it has some use. If I were the devil, and I can't do it with his flair, if I were the devil, I would undermine the importance of the local congregation. One of the great needs of Adventism is the creation and maintenance of vibrant local congregations. A healthy congregation is not a group of individuals, but a body of believers reaching out to the community around them. The task of the World Church in its General Conference organization is to coordinate funds and personnel in order to send Christ's message to the far corners of the earth. Thus, congregationalism as a form of organization is not sufficient in itself, but on the other hand, the denomination in the long run will only be healthy as its local congregations. What can be done to create healthier congregations at the local level? If I were the devil, I would create more administrative levels and generate more administrators. You've heard his riff. In fact, if I were the devil, I would get as many successful church employees as far away from the scene as possible. I would put them behind desks, cover them with papers, inundate them with committees. If there wasn't enough, I would remove them to so-called higher and higher levels until they had little direct and sustained contact with the people who make up the church. Now, don't get me wrong, I believe in church organizations, but I also believe in food, and I know that too much of a good thing has less than healthy results. Many believe that Adventism needs to trim down the number of its administrative types, the amount of its administrative real estate, so that more money and energy can be put in fighting the battle on the front line. I'm reading fast because I'm reading fast. Many Adventists are tired of paying the massive bill for a multi-layered system. At the 1999 Annual Council in Brazil, I pointed out that there is no church in the world with as many administrative levels to support as Adventism. When the article was published by the Adventist Review, the editor wanted to insert, except the Roman Catholic, I responded by telling him to add, including the Roman Catholic. The Roman Catholic system has two levels above the church, local church, while Adventism has four. The current system was developed in the horse and buggy era when even the telephone hadn't come into its own. And then the challenge for the church in the 21st century will be to reorganize. So you've heard that before. Figure 3 and 4 on your sheet. Figure 3 should be, is that a bar graph?
Yeah.
I don't have it in front of me. So, So this is from the GC statistical report, and this just gives some numbers to what Knight is driving at. There are 5,783 administrators, promotional office employees in North America. These are North American numbers. There are more administrators, therefore, than the 4,498 evangelistic and pastoral employees, and those are generally tied. So if you were arguing that maybe even a 4-to-1 or a 5-to-1 ratio administration to front lines would be healthy, this is actually upside down, if you see the data. And then you see some of the education numbers, which largely would be non-tithe out to the other side. Now, hear me. I'm not saying this is a travesty in the sense that it invests in precisely what the more foundational issue suggests that it should. Are you tracking with me? This makes perfect sense for how we ought to invest resources. Perfect sense. If our principal foundational mission is the denomination, right? So I thought about this for a while, like, how could we possibly do this? This makes no sense. No, it actually makes sense if the foundational purpose is this world is not my home. Because it's ensuring that middle of the three concentric circles is primary. The second is just three pie charts. Just again, I'm not academicians in the room, please. Just an example. These are three local churches that shows where their money goes, the money that comes out of church. And you see that the three categories, I think, are essentially what goes away. And we can talk about this in the Q&A. And the two categories, which are much smaller piece of the pie, that's actually what is invested locally in the church. And those are just common. In talking with pastoral colleagues across the land, the amount that leaves or goes to education, and by the way, education, serve on an education campus. I love Christian, you understand, I don't think, yeah. But it's a reality for the local church. We play with very little amounts of money. But it makes sense, I'm arguing this morning. Third, then, at the top of the pyramid is what this does to the attractiveness of local congregations to people, to brilliant young leaders. I want to read to you something I wrote again when I was digging through the files. This was in 2009 for Adventist Today, an article, "The End of American Adventism?" A particularly troubling consequence of comparatively well-resourced hospitals, conference offices, and educational institutions is a movement of the most creative and gifted pastors away from the local churches to those preferred environments. Some of you have read their book, historian Malcolm Bull, journalist Keith Lockhart, in Seeking a Sanctuary. By the way, it's a must-read. Write that if by the time they, that is Adventist pastors, are 40, they have not been appointed to conference officers or become notable evangelists, they may grow increasingly restless. A majority of pastors say they often feel lonely and isolated in their local church leadership. Promotions in professional Adventist ministry are almost always viewed as calls to one of the Adventist mega centers, and so local congregations are left starving for both material and visionary leadership. So, if the priority of what it means to be Adventist is not the local church, and that's what I'm arguing this morning, historically and currently, then it's really not the priority. It's not where the action is, not local. And that's reinforced by all of the resources that make creativity and innovation possible following that. How on earth are we going to attract the best and the brightest to local church leadership? I'm arguing this morning that it's impossible. And some of us spend quite a bit of time worrying over how do we get some of our very best young people to choose pastoral ministry, and then how do we get them not to leave for a better paycheck in the hospital system or more acclaim in a conference office or just get me out of here. It's a serious issue, friends. I'm terribly worried about it, and I have invested some of my life in a hospital setting and had a wonderful time, and I've spent time in education and have a wonderful time. But my goodness, what happens if we no longer have any interest in the local church? And what's happening is, and now I'm way off notes, but I'm not off time. The problem then is, and if best and the brightest is too snooty for some of you, forgive me. But what happens is you start going to pastors' meetings with people that have 6 weeks of education at some institute who know a lot about that. And they are the treasured sons and daughters of God. Hear me. They're beautiful people. But what does that do to the profession? What does that do to our sense of meaningfully being involved in a local church environment? Okay, so I'm done preaching. So what should we do? Because I've done all the negative stuff. You guys are going to critique me. Jay, you're going to critique me. Okay, so here's the positive stuff, which makes sense. Tim and Japhet and Sam and Lee. We've often said Lisa Clark Yellow should just do the whole day. Because we're all like, did Lisa just say that tweet? Which she did, you know. Lisa's smart. She's the next prophetess of the church, I think. She's our hero. Oh, please quote me on, please quote that and send it around. Send it, publish it, make money on the books that you will sell. So what do we need to do? What do we need to do? One, to the very smart theologians in this room, and there are many of you, I'm looking at you, I'm looking at some of you that are my friends. We need a decade of doing rich, deep theology about the meaning of the local church in Adventism. We do the year of the woman. We do the year of evangelism. We do the year of prayer. We do the year of revival. Look, and I'm not knocking any of that. It's good stuff. It is time for a decade of a local church. Because if there's no local church, friends, bye-bye Adventist hospitals being Adventist. Bye-bye all Adventist schools. We don't have an Adventist school problem, by the way. We don't have an Adventist education problem. I've made this speech all over the country. We have an Adventist church problem, and that's why we have an Adventist education problem. If the local church is kaput, everything else is done. Okay, so where was I? We need a decade, and it begins with theology, friends. I really believe that. I don't think it starts with having to think about what it means to be an Adventist while we're waiting. If we don't get that figured out, I think the other levels aren't gonna come into play. You know about the slow food movement? You aware? The anti-McDonald's, everything. You know about the slow city movement? The war against non-places, the sense of being local, Rod. This was over in Bainbridge Island. In fact, I saw this on Sabbath. I went over. Keep it local. This is a whole impulse that is sweeping certainly United States and Europe and Australia, among other places. This sense that we ought to eat local, we ought to be, that there's something about the local that should be celebrated, right? Amen. So we should celebrate the fact that local people are writing Sabbath school curriculums. We don't have to have Sabbath school curriculum coming from some central office. I'm not knocking Sabbath school curriculums from the central office. I'm saying we need to localize. We need to make incarnational. We ought to be doing things locally. And Tim and others are going to pick up on that. Okay, I'm almost done. I know, I see the clock. I'm well aware of what time it is. Number one. What does Jesus say to the demon-possessed beggar when he says, I want to go with you, Jesus. Jesus did not let him, but said, go home. Go home. There it is. Okay. Once that part is worked out, then I think we can actually figure out. This is 150 pages, the North American Division's report on the need to reorganize. It just came out in October, November. Some of you in the room will be aware of this. I just started to read it. There's many good ideas in this book. We need to act on them. About radical reorganization. So there it is. Some light reading for later. And finally, because I'm getting done, Japheth, I just want to say that if theologically we believe the local church matters, and then from a resource standpoint, and part of that resourcing is not just money, but it's giving political permission for innovation to happen at the local level, yeah. Right? Yeah. Without you, no. Mistakes can be made. We can try things. We can do things. You get those two, it will be easy as a college church pastor to start recruiting the best and the brightest to choose that profession.
True.
Right?
True.
Okay. Jay, we're going to talk now. And so, right, we're going to have dialogue. And I want to repeat, there are no experts standing up front. This is not a, Alex, give your opinion on, no. Okay? This is testimony. This is just unloading something. So we're going to have a conversation now, sort of like we did in the other room, but with a much bigger group, where we think about some of these things. Is that good enough? Do you need to clean up anything that I said? Yeah.
Yeah, so look, the best way for us to do this is if you have an opinion, a view, something you've heard, if you could just stand, we're going to write some stuff down, and we're going to learn from each other. So, first reactions, this is not a Q&A thing, all right, because if you come with Q&A, we don't have the A. So, and that's not a Canadian joke.
I just want to say amen to what Alex has said. It is so frustrating to be a local church pastor and have no money for innovation at the local level because everything goes on. And if I had had all the money that was spent on printing and sending me junk I threw in the wastebasket, I could have done a lot of stuff at the local church. Mm-hmm. And this stuff just keeps coming, and somehow we've got to stop it. And one of the ways is the young pastors that I've been so inspired by here need to stay at the local church.
Amen.
And change the trend and not go into those positions of promotion and so forth. I do want to make one caveat, though.
Yeah.
I hope that as we fight for change and we fight for it, that we do so ethically. Because I think when we're taking money from the tithe, it is wrong to subvert the system. I appreciate the fact, for instance, that I'm paid in a way that I don't have to do what my Baptist pastor friend does and negotiate my salary every year with the local church board. I didn't want to have to do that. One quick story. I had another pastor come and sit down in my office and look me in the eye and say, how come you and Randy Roberts are such idiots? And I said, well, I don't think Randy Roberts is an idiot. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, you guys still promote tithe in your congregation, and you send all this money to the conference. He said, I'm glad you do because we benefit from it. But in our congregation, we tell the people to give one-third of their tithe under tithe at the conference and two-thirds of it to church budget in the local church. And the figures from his church reflected that. And I think it's just unethical to live that way and feed off of the people who play by the rules.
Now, everything he says is phenomenal. It's really good. Just timing. So we want to get as many voices as we can, so compact it. Speak quickly. Rick.
Just from a theological standpoint, I really would like for us to study theologically. And I think one of the things that we need to study theologically is tithe, that somehow God smiles more upon the tithe that we give to the conference as opposed to a tithe that we would give to a local church. And I think that as Adventists, like, we need to recognize the system that we exist in, right? So, as a pastor, like, I'm paid through the denomination, just like he was saying. I think we need to recognize that, but I think that in this next generation of millennials and Gen Zs, to say that God smiles more upon the money given up as opposed to the money given here, I don't think we can make a theological case for that. And I think we just need to maybe study and explore that from a theological standpoint.
Yeah, two things. One, I represent a generation that was born between the end of World War II and the actual baby boomers. I have no name. But I am fully resonant with what's been said here all at every one project and in this meeting here. I'm so glad to be here. I want that book. Where do I get it?
Yeah.
We could raffle this right here.
I think it's worth about $7,000.
Let me say, this is available online at either the General Conference or North American Division website. A Google search for it, all of that's published. And can I just respond to a couple things?
I think it's called Change is Possible.
Yeah. John, agree. You know, absolutely agreed. And I hope you hear that in my voice. The practical concern I have is the next, and if you haven't read Not Your Father's Offering Plate, you get a copy of it immediately. I think it's in the bibliography. The next generation is not giving in the same way or patterns as previous ones, and there are practical issues that worry me. You follow what I'm saying, and they're asking more pointed questions than even my generation asked, as the whiny generation Xers.
It's better to have no name than to be a Generation Xer.
Thank you.
Sorry, but Patty, time. How much time? If you remind me of the break, yes.
Thanks for articulating the problem so well, Brian. I appreciate it. We have a similar issue in medicine, for example. The best and brightest seem to be attracted to specialties because they pay more, and the generalists, where we really need the best and brightest, don't go there. The government is trying to grapple with it. I don't like that because I'm a specialist, although we get paid the least. I'm a psychiatrist. But another issue I wanted to bring up was we have the aging pastors whose pensions we have to pay, and that's coming up now, and that's going to be a big problem in turning this around. We also are paying a lot of money to settle some lawsuits, and those are huge, and so that's going to be a problem. But I like what you're saying.
So I have experience in the spectrum. I went to pastor in Oakland about 13 years ago when the congregation was only 25, and they could not afford on paper a full-time pastor. And they were willing to fund the full-time pastor because the other churches were so faithful at the conference in giving tithe. Now, that church did grow from 25 to 400, and then we started to deal with the local issues that we have. There wasn't, all of our money was going, most of our money, majority of our money was going to the conference, and we weren't able to take care of the local needs. There is a blessing in the system that we have in place. There is a blessing that we're in for a number of situations and we don't have the time for it. But there needs to be some type of shift that can accommodate specific local needs in churches. It gives them some freedom there. Because again, I got burned out because we just couldn't keep enough resources to take care of the local church. On the other side, Pastor Brian talked about pastoring a young adult student church and so forth. I also work on a campus. And I'm going to be real with you, as I go to other campuses too, our young people don't even go to church there. A lot of them don't. When you look at the percentage of students that are in the dorms, a lot of them aren't getting up and going to church. And we're talking about they don't have a church when they leave campus. True, they won't have Vespers. But we talk about 11 o'clock, global hour, we all come together, holy convocation. They don't get out of their dorm rooms to even go to our churches on campus. Lots of area has an issue. I know, and I'm kind of like, anyway, the point is, we have a big issue, even in our Adventist campus tradition.
June, let me go to that.
Thank you for the statistics. I noticed on here that we have 14,000 employees. We have 14,000 employees who are not in the local pastorate, 4,500 that are. So that's a 3-to-1 ratio. It would be, that's one point. Second point is, our educators are actually paid partially by tithe. That's just a technical embedded piece. But I'm wondering what would happen if all of those who are the 3-to-1 ratio would partner with the local church in tangible ways. There seems to be oftentimes a great disconnect between those two. The last point would be the use of tithe is not a moral issue, it's a policy issue. So yeah. If we design the policy once, mm-hmm. it might be time to readdress it.
Key word is trust. If we cannot go forward with trust, it's not going to happen. What happens in this room today will have no effect if the local church cannot be trusted and people in the local church cannot be trusted. Second, there is a tsunami that is happening right now in the church. It's called retirement and money. If these two things combine, as I believe our prescient leaders are seeing, then now is the time. We may not have this chance again in the next generation.
Thank you so much, Alan. You have articulated the pain that we feel and see at the local church. Pastors are crying all around us for the reasons that you just pointed out. How about if we plan a one project or a create session where 50 to 100 conference presidents, union executives, North American executives meet with us. Maybe we ought to give those 100 free registration to meet with us. If they're still afraid to meet with us, maybe we ought to plan our one project and create in Washington, D.C. during annual council. Invite them over.
I want to just say, two weeks ago, I spent 4 days with all the presidents of North America, all the local conference presidents of North America. They are great people.
Yes, they are.
No, I mean, they are really good people. And frankly, they get this. To me, the challenge is the system. It's not people. And that means me. And I still think we're talking about money. I still think that it's the bottom part of that pyramid that's the most critical, is making a decision that the local church actually matters. Because I think until we're okay with that, and we're okay with the thought that we can abide for years or decades and still be faithful Adventists, right? Still be faithful in terms of, I think until we sort that out, it's going to be tricky to get the others to settle in. But
first, I just want to say thank you. Every time I come to one of these conferences, the one from the project, it does challenge my faith. It challenges my belief system. But each time that I do get challenged, I always come back to me. Because anything that's going to happen starts with me first. And so, what am I doing at the local church? How am I supporting the local church? And so, I hope that as we understand there's things that need to happen up here within the greater body, there's things that have to happen here with me first. And so, we are all given that ability to reveal the character of Christ through our lives. And if we really love our church, I'm going to say our local church, how does that happen with me? Because there's one thing about paying my tithe, but my tithe, if I pay my tithe, is it a sacrifice? And so, am I going to give more of myself? Not just in my funds, myself, so that the local church can prosper, because it starts with me first.
Thank you very, very much. I appreciate that focus on the local church. I come from Germany, and Germany is a very divided church, very much so. And the division is not so much over money or theological issues like ordination. It is about the power to define what Adventism will look like in 20 years. And when I look at our church, it seems to me that we have given up our abilities to define what Adventism is to a small group of administrators. And
you're here.
What we need is the local churches have to reclaim ownership of what Adventism means. And so if we bring back that authority and this ownership to local churches, there will be life again.
I think I really appreciate all that was said. I really do unfold to your pastor and my brother over here that talked about how we need to operate within the system. Has benefits. That being said, I've been appalled forever about the amount of administration to pastoral ratio, and I thought he was on the other side. Just I didn't know that it was backwards, you know what I'm saying? That there were more administrators than there were pastors. I thought there were more pastors than administrators, but that there were still too many. And so I don't so that's horrifying to me. I don't know, I'm a pastor under 30. I don't know any other pastors under 30 or any pastors with whom I resonate of any age that want more involvement from administration on any level, whether that's conference. I don't know anyone who wants that. And so I think we do need to operate with that system, and that system can benefit us. But there is a drastic shift that needs to happen. And then secondly, real quick, I just came from seminary. I'm back in local context. Of the people that I was in school with, probably 1% or less of them are people that I was excited were going to be pastors. Of that 1% or less, at least 50% of those people are already now pastors.
Wow.
Okay? I left 8 months ago. And of my friends and colleagues who do my resume that are under the age of 30, who actually do their jobs, who don't just collect a paycheck, who actually do their jobs, at least 75% of us are not lifers in this, because we cannot see how we can operate in this system in any meaningful way for the rest of our lives. So, just to terrify you more I have lived exclusively in Baptist ghettos. I'm with this, but this is a big problem for people like me.
Rosalind, and then we're going to go to close.
I'm passionate about my church. I come from London, England. And Jacob, you say about you get stage where you get somebody good in a job in a pastorship, and then they move them out. We've had this all the time with our youth pastors. They just get to know the youth, they get them doing stuff, and they put them in an office job, and they drown it. But how can they say no? They can't. If they're called to it, they've got to go. I feel that it's all about power. It comes that the office say, you've got to go. Also, talking about offerings, the youth now give intelligently, and if they don't know where their money's going, they don't give. Yeah. And if they don't like where it's going, they don't give. Right. So we will have a situation where they won't give, because they can't see anything for it. So that's one of them.
Just want to add, and maybe this is ironic in the end, but you should know, because some of you, we worship together. The irony of all this is, I love my local church.
Mm-hmm.
Like, incredibly so.
Mm-hmm.
So, what I'm describing, the place where I worship and the place where we do ministry is amazing. So, I should say that.
Hey, we're going to take a 10-minute break, but this is the thing. We're going to start whether you come back in the room or not. And if you're coming back late, just be quiet when you come in so that we can actually begin the next presentation, because we're recording that. So it's now 9:55. That means 10:05. 10:05. Just, 5 minutes past 10.
Good discussion.